Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. So after a New York Times report revealed that Facebook granted users' friends' data to device makers like Amazon, Apple, BlackBerry, remember BlackBerry, and Samsung on Sunday, that Times story came out. Now the Times has followed up with a new report today saying that Facebook has similarly granted data to Chinese device makers who, according to the FBI, pose a national security risk. Now, Facebook is saying not to worry. Data shared with the Chinese company Huawei stayed on the devices, not the servers. And if you're still concerned, one of the device makers that Facebook shared data with, Apple, wants to reassure you that unlike Facebook, Apple does care about your privacy and your health. So should you feel reassured? I'm joined now by Siva Vaidyanathan, who's the Robertson Professor of Media Studies and Director of the Center for Media and Citizenship at the University of Virginia. He has a new book coming out next week called Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy. And with us also is futurist comedian, writer, and activist Baratunde Thurston, who was a director's fellow at the MIT Media Lab, writing recently about what citizens can do to take on big tech. Some of you know his previous work, including being social media for the director for The Daily Show and other things. So Baratunde and Siva, welcome back to WNYC.
It's great to be here, Brian. Thanks.
Yes, good morning. Good to meet you through Brian Lehrer, Siva.
Yeah.
So there's a lot to, I'm surprised you two haven't met before, given what you're both known for. But there's a lot to unpack here. So let's start separating out how Cambridge Analytica got access to the data it ended up getting and what kinds of access these device makers were getting. Third-party apps like the one Cambridge Analytica used during the election had access to, quote, public data channels or APIs. But even when those were restricted, device makers still had access to what the Times is calling private data channels until this past April. Siva, can you put this in plain language for our listeners?
Yeah, basically, from the dawn of Facebook, the entire management structure has been committed to maximum surveillance of every Facebook user and maximum distribution of data. They have firmly believed that we are better off if people get what they call better services, and better services come from the maximum sharing of data. There are dozens of very explicit statements from Mark Zuckerberg to that effect over the years. He has never, until very recently, exhibited any concern for these policies. This has been an explicit policy of Facebook, nor has it been a secret, by the way, right? I mean, we sort of have these screaming headlines in 2018 about Cambridge Analytica, about cell phone users, specifically about Huawei, which is a terribly frightening thing. But the fact is, people have been following this stuff for a long time. Security and privacy analysts and advocates, social media scholars, we have been trying to raise alarms about these problems since at least 2010. In 2011, the Federal Trade Commission issued a very strong consent decree against Facebook for just these sorts of practices. Facebook promised that it would not promiscuously share data without user permission. It has not held itself up to that standard. The FTC has been delinquent in following up and ensuring that it's enforced. And now we're in a situation where we see nefarious firms like Cambridge Analytica and Huawei having our data. And, you know, this was a thoroughly foreseeable situation. As I said, this was explicit, non-secret Facebook policy and practice for many years.
So, Baratunde, what explanation is Facebook providing for what it gave device makers this type of broad access? I know it's saying that, you know, we should trust that these device makers didn't abuse the access that they were given. But what's your reaction to Facebook's defense?
Well, first I'd say to everything that Siva just said, if we were on Facebook, I would like that and then reshare it. Very, very good recap on that. I mean, my defense or my explanation of their defense is skepticism. As Siva mentioned, it has been their goal. They're essentially a birthday reminder service that underneath of which is a global surveillance operation. And it's been in their business interest. I think to try to represent their perspective a little bit, what they would say is we needed to partner with these hardware makers so that the Facebook apps and functions on your phone could operate. And there is a technical truth to that. I mean, the apps that they got in trouble for earlier, the device partnerships that they've made, some level of sharing, some level of access to information about me and my friends is useful if I want to share a photo I just took with my friends without launching the app. If I want to know who of my friends is also in the Words with Friends app, it's the, these apps and these hardware platforms need to know who I'm connected to. What's not cool, what's not useful, is the level of data hoarding and promiscuity is a great term. We have like hoarding and promiscuity. It's very filthy business Facebook has been in, and the lack of transparency around it. And so they would claim we users knew this because of the tens of thousands of words of cryptic legal documents buried in the terms of service, but we didn't really understand. And they designed it so that we couldn't understand, so that it was left to social media scholars who, no offense, are not the folks that most of the world are listening to understand the truth of what was going on. So it's a bit disingenuous, their defense, because they designed their system so that we couldn't know, couldn't protest, and gave us no power to exercise more control over ourselves, which is our data.
And so, listeners, if you have any comments on this or questions for our social media scholars, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. For Baratunde Thurston, who was just speaking last, and among other things, was a director's fellow at the MIT Media Lab and has the forthcoming book, Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy. And Siva Vaidyanath, I'm sorry, it's Siva's.
In, oh man, I was he, like, I have a book.
You didn't know.
Out.
You don't
That's
have
amazing.
A book. You just have a lot of various cool things. Siva has a book. That book I just said, and he's Robertson Professor of Media Studies and Director of the Center for Media and Citizenship at the University of Virginia. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Siva, can you explain why, according to this Times article, the FBI considers that Chinese device maker Huawei to be a national security threat, and how it could even potentially be that in any greater way with the personal information about any of us and our Facebook friends that Facebook would have shared with them?
There are a number of Chinese-based companies that have a record of being way too close to the Chinese military, and Huawei is one of those. Not being a national security person, I don't have technical details on why and how, but it's not too difficult to imagine that basically they have backdoors in their hardware, the sort of backdoors that our FBI has been demanding that Apple and other device makers install in devices sold in the U.S. You know, look, the Chinese government has no interest in having mobile phone users in China work without work without surveillance or outside of surveillance. So, you know, it is, I think, the second largest distributor of mobile phones in the world. It's either one or two within China. And there are a number of documents issued by congressional committees, issued by elements of the U.S. government, warning people not to purchase these phones, directing that the federal government may not purchase these phones. They're leaky cauldrons. They're totally unsafe. And again, this was not a secret. Anybody who works in the mobile phone world has known this for some time. And people at Facebook should have had this conversation. What's stunning is that over the years, Facebook almost never has a conversation about what's the worst thing that can happen here. You know, they never had it when it came to sharing data with app developers. They never had that conversation when they put up Facebook Live and people started hurting themselves and others through Facebook Live, like absolutely no awareness that human beings and governments can do terrible things to each other. Mm.
Baratunde, I see you went on a journey to discover what kind of data internet companies are keeping on you. What did you find and how does it generalize to everybody else?
I found basically an unauthorized diary of my life, a sort of digital dossier that's being assembled on all of us. I went through in a series I wrote for Medium that just published yesterday, what I call the data detox. And so I looked at Google, I looked at Facebook, I looked at the terms of service of one of my favorite apps called Evernote to try to reclaim a sense of myself from various places. And what I found out is that there is a lot of information that they need for their services to run. And I want to emphasize it's a technical truth that they will need data to power these services. But I also understood that they had been taking information. You know, I used one app to try to find food at the airport. Sometimes we're at the airport, we're hungry, those directories are hard to find. And I wanted to know where the Shake Shack was, because your boy likes Shake Shack. Mm-hmm. So I installed this app. I used Facebook to log into the app, because I really wanted the Shake Shack. I didn't want to search for the directory and create a new login and a new password. So I trusted these people. And in exchange for delivering me into this mobile app quickly, Facebook offered up a huge snitch report. Right, it offered up my religious beliefs, all of my friends, the membership of every Facebook group I was administrator of, every photo I had either taken or been tagged in. And that's literally not a fair trade. And so what I discovered in detail, what I knew at a high level, what I found at a very personal level, is that we have been subject to some very bad deals and deals where we didn't have full information or full power to exercise control over ourselves through our data. I also found, fortunately, some steps we can take to restore some balance to the system. And I proposed some ways to not just end up in a freaked out state where I was for a few months and get back into a more empowered state, which is where I think we need to go as a society. We're not going to unplug completely from the internet, but we do need to have these technology tools work for us, work for people, and not just the other way around where people are serving the companies and the machines and their profit motives exclusively.
Peter in Norwalk, you're on WNYC. Hi, Peter.
Hi, how are you doing? I wanted to bring up the fact that it's a little unfair to pick on Facebook specifically. I work in social media. I have my own agency, and I work extensively on Facebook. And I have to say that they are just as bad as everybody else, and companies like Google and Amazon, who sell retargeting data about us, are just as bad, if not worse, as Facebook. So it's a little disingenuous just to pick on them. And I'd like to shift the conversation to say that this is a huge problem with corporate America knowing and selling our data, and it's way beyond Facebook. It's just the tip of the iceberg.
Siva, what do you think about that?
Yeah, well, so bravo. Absolutely. Facebook is not the only company that engages in these sorts of nefarious practices. But here's the difference. Facebook has a larger impact than any other tech company, with the possible exception of Google. And that's across the entire world. So here's the deal. 2.2 billion people use Facebook regularly. There's nothing close to that. The only thing that comes even close to it is about 1.6 billion people use YouTube regularly around the world. But YouTube is a very different system and service, and we use it in a less intimate way. Of the top seven social media services in the world, four are owned by Facebook. Two of those only operate in China and barely operate outside of China, and the remainder is YouTube. So if you only count the ones that operate outside of China, we're talking five, and four of those are owned by Facebook.
So what about Apple here, Baratunde? Because, you know, after these latest Times revelations about Facebook over the last few days, Apple CEO Tim Cook has said it requested zero personal data from Facebook and is trying to position itself in contrast to Facebook, since its business is centered around hardware rather than data. And its Worldwide Developers Conference, at that conference, Apple is rolling out features for its next iOS operating system update to help users avoid feeling overwhelmed by their phones. So do you think we should be more inclined to trust Apple? Sounds like Tim Cook is positioning the company for us to feel that way.
Tim Cook is a very smart person, taking advantage of his competitor's weaker position And I applaud that if it's in the service of humanity, for real. I mean, what I would love to see is a level of transparency and easy understanding, as the caller mentioned, it's not just Facebook, of what's going on with our information across all these companies. And we've done this in other industries. When it comes to food, you know, we don't drag chemical analysis machines one person at a time to the grocery store to understand the ingredient makeup of what we're putting into our bodies. The government mandates nutrition labels, and we understand the percent of all these vitamins and possible challenges that are in our food. We could have a similar sort of result around technology where we had a data usage label, who's doing what with your stuff that has a visual layer to it, that's LEED certified from a data perspective. And I do think Apple is doing better because they're in a different business. They're not in the advertising business nearly as significantly as Facebook and Google and many of these other companies. And when you create advertising as the revenue engine for the business, you end up in the data business. You end up in turning people into products business because they're selling our attention. They're selling our access to our wallets. They're selling our desires. So Apple is doing better, and I think because their business model is different, because they're savvy, and they're taking this moment, and they're smart. Like, they want to survive. Nobody wants to be the person that destroys democracy or the company that undermines civil society. I wouldn't say, maybe some co-brother industry wants to do that. But in general, most businesses don't want to destroy the ground where they do business. And I think Apple is doing a really smart thing and hopefully a genuine thing to restore, again, balance and a bit more power to we the people, we the users. Without us, these services are really dumb, right? Facebook with no people is an empty wall. Apple with no users is just a brick, right? A phone without a user is a physical bookmark. It's a bookend. So they need us. We need them. Let's have more balance in that relationship.
Jesse in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jesse.
Yeah, hi. I want to bring up something that Jaron Lanier has mentioned repeatedly, that, mm-hmm. that the basic business model of the Internet somehow became getting ever-growing profit by ever-growing manipulation of the users. And it's built into the system that we don't pay for. And if we paid for it, we'd get good service instead. So somebody should turn that around, shouldn't they?
Well, that's pretty interesting. And I know Jaron Lanier was just here talking about this on Midday last week. So let's go to solutions. Siva, you were talking about the concentration of social media in a few companies' hands. What do you think lawmakers in D.C. should do about that? Should they break the companies up like the old, you know, trust busters, or do you recommend anything?
Look, there are at least two necessary but insufficient regulatory interventions that our congressional leaders should take very seriously. Number one is antitrust, as you mentioned, right? We need the Federal Trade Commission to aggressively enforce the consent decree that it has already issued. We need the Federal Trade Commission to do another investigation of both Facebook and Google in terms of their competitive position, in terms of not just their core market, but advertising in general, which they're basically as a duopoly sucking out all of the capital from all of the other industries that need advertising, like journalism. We also need to consider breaking up Facebook. Think about when I mentioned those other apps, we're talking about Facebook Messenger, we're talking about WhatsApp, and we're talking about Instagram. If Facebook had never been allowed to buy Instagram or WhatsApp, because they were clearly potential competitors in the market, mm-hmm. we would have a much better ecosystem right now. Neither WhatsApp nor Instagram come anywhere close to the sort of security risk and privacy risk in terms of WhatsApp, right, as Facebook. And in mm-hmm. terms of propaganda distribution, Instagram is nowhere near what Facebook is. So break them up. But the other thing we need to do in this country is consider European-style data protection. The GDPR, the General Data Protection Regulation in Europe, which just came into effect, is going to have a profound effect on the structure and practices of many of these countries. I'm crossing my fingers that the results, the re-engineering of all these companies will echo through and across the world, and specifically in the United States. But it's not going to be good enough because we don't know how European courts are going to interpret or dumb down that law over time. And basically, we need our Congress to take a stand to protect the American people rather than these companies.
Baratunde, we just have 2 minutes left, but and I haven't read Jaron Lanier's new stuff to know if Jesse the caller was quoting him accurately. Maybe you do, but what about this idea of if this wasn't a free service, all these things, if people actually had to pay to use them, then they would be more accountable to those users? I'm not sure that's the solution, but that's what the caller asked.
I think it is a partial solution. I think, you know, the advertising model that supports all the internet has turned we the people into we the product, and that's an unhealthy relationship. And Jaron is promoting something much more dramatic, which is unplug from a lot of these services. Let's fund it. Let's have the users pay. And that is a partial solution. I think there's individual steps that we can take. I go through a bunch of them in this lengthier piece, but I think the short version is get to know the products that you're using, go through a few of the terms, tweak your permissions, and just, you know, we've been living here long enough. Let's get to know the neighborhood that we've moved into. And that's at the individual level. At the systemic level, Siva is absolutely right about regulation. I think we are being treated as a collective by these companies, right? It's big data that matters to them, not individual data. And so we have to have a collective response. And I think regulation is part of it. The way they're funded is a big part of it as well. And what the economic incentives are, part of the reason that these companies grow so quickly, that they're so aggressive in sucking out all of our information, is because they're trying to return big money to already rich people really fast. And so, you know, if you follow the money and that old adage, you answer some of the how, the why, and I think some of the how will be fixing that financial relationship and changing some of the incentives around. So I would encourage people to follow at a minimum. There's a great Twitter account. It's called info_activism. They are all about this data game. They've created tools. The detox that I did and wrote about was based on their work, and they have some new tools that they've launched since I did the thing I did. And it's just a great hub of information. So thank you for asking. And that's my shortest version of an answer to a big question.
What is really going on beneath those screens? Yeah. Baratunde Thurston is a futurist comedian, writer, and activist. Siva Vaidyanathan is a media and citizenship studies professor at UVA and author of the book coming out next week, Anti-Social Media, How Facebook Disconnects Us and Undermines Democracy. Thank you both so much.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC.